Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Carver Watson with Let's Talk.
Good morning. Before we start, I'd like to acknowledge the sovereignty of all First Nations people right across the country, particularly the local traditional owners of our immediate broadcast area. And of course, we acknowledge our elders of the First People of this country and elders of more recent arrivals, and all of our listeners tuned in across the National Indigenous Radio Service. It's great to be here on our 25th birthday for 98.9 FM. And speaking of elders, I'm joined in the studio by one of mine and one of ours here at the station, Uncle Charlie Watson, a Birriggubba and Kungaloo man. Uncle, I won't ask you to introduce yourself because, you don't need any introduction around here, and you've certainly spent a lot of time and years involved in and around the station and in the community as well. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Carver. No, it's good to be here. It's been a while since I've been back this way, so it's wonderful to see the station going as strong as ever, a lot stronger, I believe.
You know, 25 years ago is the time we got our sort of first, our own license. You know, it was the day that, we first went to air as 4AAA at the time. What's the name here? Uncle Bob Anderson's arrived. So bring him on in. We'll pull out a chair there. When we first went to air, there's a story that goes back before then. That goes back some years, nearly 10 years on 4ZZZ. Morning, Uncle Bob.
Morning.
G'day. Come on in.
Hey, brother.
It's like a gathering of the clan, is it?
Absolutely. Grab a chair there, brother.
Yes, I'm delighted.
Come on in, Unc. Well, we're also joined by another well-known Aboriginal elder in the community, Uncle Bob Anderson. Morning, Unc.
Good morning, all. It's a wonderful day, isn't it?
It is certainly a wonderful day. Mm. I'm glad you could be here.
I'm delighted to be here. It's been a long time, and I was reflecting coming over of the past and growing up in East Brisbane. Mm. I'm a Quanamooka man, a saltwater man, but growing up in East Brisbane and my Aboriginal grandmother, or correction, my Aboriginal mother used to say to me, be home by dark, be home by dark. And they were the days in Brisbane when the curfew laws existed that blacks had to be out beyond the boundaries by dark.
Mm.
And I didn't realise that till later. The history of the streets, the boundaries are quite clear and etched in people's minds now. So we always like to let the general public know the history of the areas where we've lived and walked, and see the changes that have taken place. And change takes place when good people become aware of what the institutions have been and what they how they imposed themselves and restricted the rights of Aboriginal people, and they take measures to correct them.
Of course. We as Indigenous media company organisation. That's a role that we've played. And we was just talking to Uncle, it was 25 years ago today that we had our first broadcast in the old building over there at Rocklea.
Yeah.
But before then, it was the start of the Murray Hour that goes back nearly 10 years.
Yeah.
4ZZZ.
Yeah. Uncle Charles, if you could recount, how did that come about and why do you think the Murray Hour sort of grew in popularity and was something that people were, responded to?
Well, it come mainly about through your father, Brother Ross. He's passed now, but back then in the Commonwealth Games, they had all the protests, Bob, and
that's right, yeah.
Ross had was sort of one of the main organisers, and the hundreds of people were being arrested. They had a big tent city in Musgrave Park. Mm. He realised that Ross was very, he was able to see the future almost and see what was needed for our community.
Absolutely, yeah.
4ZZZ, the university community radio station, was very supportive in the protests and helped in a lot of different ways. And brother, seeing this in action and realised, you know, it was something that the community definitely needed. And he worked on it from then on after the protest had finished and talked with the organisers there. And like you say, we started off, I think, with a 1 hour. It was pre-recorded, broadcast back. And when, what year? I don't know, Carl.
84 is the year that I keep hearing. Yeah, that'll be right. And it's we've got some of the stuff that we'll play here, sort of, you know, and get your comment and that sort of thing. But
from 84, you know, the 1 hour pre-recorded show, or Murray Hour, they call it. It went on, I think, in the end. Triple Z, we were doing 24, 28 hours a week. It was saturation, basically. We couldn't get any more. It was because there's a lot of other community groups that needed
started to outgrow your boots sort of thing at Triple Z. Yeah.
And it was ideal. We won the licence then, we were right.
Uncle Bob, you mentioned it there before, you know, during those 80s, we all know the history of the Bjorke-Peterson era and all that sort of stuff and the condition that our mob and communities were living under. What do you think the role of sort of Murray Hour and our own media had for our communities at that time, you know? Because, I mean, were we getting a fair sort of representation in the, I don't know what the papers were then, was it still the Australian and the Courier Mail and the like?
The Brisbane Courier Mail in the morning and the Telegraph in the afternoon. Well, the Aboriginal people were invisible, where as long as we confined ourselves to Musgrave Park and didn't create too much of a scene anywhere, well, then we were allowed to exist. Mm-hmm. But as I say, it's the concept that those who walked before us, they were talking about Uncle Rossi before and others, well, they were visionaries in the sense that we had rights to carry out the same practices of communication as mainstream society was doing, and the concept of the radio station and the independent school also. See, those things were absolutely marvellous, and I'm thinking about what the slogan in the in earlier times, Ho 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 Chi Minh, dare to struggle, dare to win, and that's what we've done. They rose to the challenge, and we won. That's the reality of it. And I was on the board of the radio station for a long time, and I was also on the board of the Aboriginal Isle of Independent School too. So all those things are so important. That Jinung, our footprints are still on the land, always have been, and always will be on the land too. And the changes that are taking place now. I was just good on the thing with when we're talking about dare to struggle, dare to win. Koiki Mabo, when he challenged the status of Terra Nullius and changed the whole concept of the past and destroyed that myth of Terra Nullius. So we've been here a long time in my own community over on Manjeriba. We've said that also recently with our celebrating our native title. But which was recognised on the 4th of July 2011 on the structuring of KIAC, the Konamuka Yulu Burrabee Aboriginal Corporation. Well, all those things are happening right across the nation for different groups to be able to articulate quite clearly who we were. I think, didn't they have the BRACs broadcasting to remote Aboriginal communities? Well, they were the voices travelling across the continent too, that we're here, we haven't gone away, and we articulate who we are.
Carver, one of the things I'd just like to remind listeners about, when we went for the licence, I'll never forget, it was a contested hearing, there was, I think, four different parties, and they were very well, you know, universities and family radio and different ones, that they were very well backed. We were lucky, you know, we had to run around and try and get support almost the night before in some cases. But during the hearings, it was almost like a court scene, how different they had barristers and different legal guys questioning, you know. Mm. Well, why do you want a radio, they said to Ross at one stage. Mm. And he said, because it's an essential service for our community. Mm. We don't have it and we want it so we can inform our community, we can entertain our community, mm. And it can be part of our... He spoke so well, I just forget the exact words he said,
mm.
but he always spoke about radio...
being an essential service.
Essential service for our mm. community.
Mm. I've got some old grabs here. Triple Z have been very accommodating, have they always, right. as they always have been for us, you know.
We still have
a good relationship with Triple Z.
Yes.
They actually take the best bits of Let's Talk at the end of the week and put it on their digital station. And so we still maintain a very good relationship with 4ZZZ.
They've been kind enough to
send over some old audio. Right. I've got a couple of minutes here that I'd like to sort of play for us. One is a bit of a recap of one of the meetings during the 80s down at Musgrave Park. And the other is a phoner with yourself, Unc, and the old fellow Ross Watson, about, I believe it was a Canberra new Parliament House protest.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
and they were unfurling a big...
We had a team down there to report on it.
Yeah. So I want to play some of that, and just a reminder for our listeners that this audio does contain the voices of deceased people. But I'd like to get your comments afterwards, Unc, about, you know, the role that our media does play as an essential service of sharing our perspectives, you know, as Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people. I've got to find it now. Here we go.
In Musgrave Park this morning, about 200 Murrays and their supporters gathered to talk about and act over the bashings by police of Murrays at a football dance last Saturday night. Over 60 people were arrested, most on the charge of drunk and disorderly, and that included people who don't even drink. Others were charged with offences such as obscene language and resisting arrest. They were all standard charges, which perhaps point toward the premeditated and prefabricated nature of the action on the part of police. A number of those arrested will be fighting the charges against them, maintaining that they will not be convicted for something they didn't do and didn't initiate. There was also a lot of discussion about how to get justice. This included pressuring for an independent inquiry into the incident, which was also supported by white speakers. There were many strong and powerful speakers from the black community who urged people to join together and fight this whole thing together. Many saw the actions of the police as yet another example of the way that Aboriginal people are treated by the state government, the federal government, and other white institutions which are outwardly and inherently racist. Some speakers argued that it was the responsibility of the Murrays to change the racist government by voting them out. Others said, why vote? What is there to vote for? Who is there to vote for? And why vote, while the system is so obviously rotten? Many other voices said that the answer lay in the unity of the Murray community, that it was the responsibility of the white people, the white government, to fulfil justice for Aboriginal people of Australia. And through doing this, it would break the pattern of discrimination. Petitions calling for an inquiry into the bashings can be signed at any Murray organisation and will also be at other community places.
Okay, but can you just let us know what's the situation there now?
Well, from the earlier report, it went back to what happened. The Queen and all the big fellas, you know, the big mob, they went inside there, Bob Hawke, and they put the speakers on and they were talking up. You know, we could hear them on the speakers. So we just kept chanting, you know, land, right. And all some deadly chants there coming in, and you know, big mob there, and I reckon there was at least 5,000 Murrays and, you know, non-Indigenous people there, all wearing colours.
Good one.
And Ross, the flags, mate, the very size of it was unreal.
Right.
If anyone gets a chance just to watch any news footage tonight, they'll have it. You know, one particular flag, they had it held up by the helium balloons and anchored to the ground, you know.
Deadly one, eh?
You just see it all over, mate. You know, it must have been a 50-foot long, eh?
Yeah, deadly one.
And later on, up where we were on the side, there's a sort of sloping stone wall, and we were down the bottom, and we were close. But the sloping stone wall, and we're saying, oh, it'd be good to get some really big flags on that. And what happened? Charlie Harris and Cole Smith went up the top. I don't know how they got up there, you know, sort of like security. Right? And they had to jump a fence. They went over, and we didn't realise it at the time, and they're lowering this giant Aboriginal flag just 10 feet above our head. And we said, oh, good on you, Charlie, good on you. And we thought that was quite okay. But apparently they sort of snuck over there and done it. Charlie sort of very calm and spoken, waving to us and up a bit and down a bit. And he said, oh, yes, and he was real calm about it. And as soon as they disappeared, all these coppers come running over and we all started singing out. And anyhow, they left the flag again. They were talking on the two-way and must have been to see you, like, telling to leave it. But that was really great, just what Charlie and Goldsmith done there.
Yeah, didn't they?
Big flag there, and it really stood out. Just the people there,
they're
fantastic, you know.
Right, any no sort of no hassles, nothing like that, Charlie?
Yeah, no, brother, you know, completely different from, you know, Musgrave Park in Queensland. You know, the police, they sort of just, they stayed right back, you know. A couple of coppers come and stood right in the middle of the black fellows there, and we all started giving the heart. And I just walked up to these marshals there, these marshals. I said, listen, you know, why don't you get the fellows moved? I said, they're just, you know, provocative, just standing there.
Yeah, right.
You know, a couple of them slated bank, they were gone,
the
they just waved them on.
Bit of audio there from way back.
It brings back memories. It's had a bit of nostalgia.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. But that Murray Hour and being an essential service, you know, there was nothing, I guess, at that time where our mob were actually talking about events and news and things that affected our communities and how we saw things.
Yeah.
You know, so what's your... You know, is that sort of one of the pillars, do you think, of why the Murray Hour grew and why it was important, why it is essential service?
I think so, because, you know, things like the opening of the Parliament House and the amount of blackfellas that come from all over Australia to be there, like, in protest and or to just be there, maybe, if just to let people know, hey, we're still here, blackfellas still here in this country from all over. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, through radio and media, our own media, like, we're able to talk to our own mob and tell our own mob in our own way, tell our own stories. And people, I think, you know, they wouldn't want to hear that. Too often we're hearing mainstream media and it just doesn't relate to us and, you know, our community in many, many times. You know, we live in two worlds, say, like a white fella world that controls, you know, with all the legal stuff and that, and that Murray world. So we live, quite often we're living in two worlds a lot of the time, but we definitely need to have our own media. It's so important.
And
yes, it is indeed. We've always maintained our cultural identity and our cultural integrity. And that's what makes us the people that we are. Yeah.
And we need the platform to be able to express that and articulate that.
And being visible too, I do recall going down to Canberra years ago when some intrepid young fellows from, Sydney went up there and put up the Aboriginal Tent Embassy, which was promptly pulled down the authorities, which sent out the alarm to right across the nation. And we went down in large numbers. I went down too to put the tent back up again, and that was an interesting scenario as well. But it was confronting the issue and again publicising the fact that we haven't gone away and we will not be silent.
And still here.
Still here.
Now, I've got to ask the question, because to this very day we do, you know, we have a lot of non-Indigenous listeners. You know, we are a country music station as well as an Aboriginal Indigenous radio station. And sometimes, you know, people are sensitive to some of the things that we might say that challenge the history and facts of this country. Was that always the case? You know, did you get different mob that would ring in and be a bit offended by, Indigenous views on things?
I think so. Like, I didn't actually work at the station. I was on the board, like Brother Bob here. And I didn't actually see it, but a lot of the staff told us they got some pretty rough calls. From people, but we got some brilliant calls too from people. And like guys used to ring up, and Tiger told me this story, a nephew, your cousin brother, you know, who he's passed too. But he told us some good stories, like these white fellas would ring up and they'd say, hey, look, I love your music, it's fantastic station. What do you keep talking about all this black fella shit all the time for? And he said, mate, we are black fellas.
I still think there's a lot of listeners, they still don't know. Yeah.
And Tiger say, mate, look, this is our address. Come in and have a yarn. Come and have a cup of tea with us one day. And I tell you what, some of those guys did come in and sit down and have a cup of tea and looked around and seen Murrays and Whitefellas working in the station. And they went away with a completely different perspective, and they continued to be listeners. And I take my hat off to those people, because they found it very hard at first confronting, you know. They didn't grow up, obviously, with a knowledge of the Aboriginal people of this country, the Indigenous people. But through the station, they did learn. Another wonderful story was one lady, I think was up the North Coast. She loved the station, loved the music, loved everything about it. And her kid started listening too. The father was different. He hated it, and he wouldn't let them listen to it. So they had to listen on the quiet. So it was completely different, you know, but they got most of the family on side through the station, just, you know, being what we are, talking normally and listening to our music, having a yarn. And it helped convert most of this family to what we say, Murray way, you know. Having a respect there. You know?
We've been listening to birthday wishes sort of this morning in Brekkie, and we've been getting them sort of over the last week or so. We've put the call out and people have been ringing in. They're saying exactly that, you know, appreciate for everything you do, not only the music, but, you know, talking about Indigenous issues and perspectives, you know. Uncle Bob, you know, you were talking about that you know, those things about attitudes, you know, and the changes that you've seen over time. How do you feel about, you know, how things are now in the community? Do you think we're seeing some change in attitudes over the course of your lifetime?
Yes, without a doubt. As I said, I grew up in East Brisbane when the curfew laws were on, and my mum and my Aboriginal mother was born at a fisherman's camp on Coran, Burrinjeriba, South Stradie, that relates to, but she grew up on the Moongalba Aboriginal Reserve on Stradie. There's four generations of my family buried in the Mission Cemetery over there, see? So we know who we are and what we're about, but again, we were shadow people. And I think the fact that my mother's family, my daddy's family, were all Irish, and that made a difference to me locally, because it removed the isolation that we were feeling about not being able to participate in mainstream society. I remember used to go to a dance studio in Wollongabba, and my younger days, there's a photo of me there, see that there? That's me there at about 18, 16 years of age, and modest about it, say I was tall, dark, and real handsome.
I tell you what, he was too. Have a look at that, huh?
We'll have to chuck it online so people can see. And I see you're on the far right there, aren't?
That's
deadly.
Generations. That's my mother. Yeah, my mother, my grandmother, my great grandmother, and my great grandmother Winnie Ebo was born on country. Mulgumpen, Moreton Island, about the mid-1800s, and she's resting in the Moongalba Aboriginal Reserve Cemetery.
Bloody brilliant.
Wonderful. So all of those things made us who we are, but I'd like to get back again to honour those who cleared the pathway and, as I said, dare to struggle and dare to win, and Uncle Rossi was one of those. Mm.
I want to come back to that, because at our opening we also had another well-known local man that was at the opening, old Uncle Neville Bonner.
Exactly.
And we've got some of that audio and we'll play it when we come back. But, you know, the other big part of, I guess, our own media in them early days was, you know, we had a lot of deadly music and a lot of deadly artists, you know, that a lot of our mob could only listen to and hear through our own stations and our own programs. So I want to go to one of those main ones right now, Wurrumpi Band, and a lot of the mob out there will know this song. You're listening to Let's Talk. We're speaking to two well-known and significant contributors to the story that is 98.9 FM, Uncle Charlie Watson and Uncle Bob Anderson. And we're going to take a quick break for a song and we'll be back shortly. Thank you.
This is Carver Watson with Let's Talk.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. Joined in the studio by Uncle Charlie Watson and Uncle Bob Anderson. And Uncle Charles, you're just saying off air, you know, the significance of that song, you know, at that time. You mind sharing with the listeners out there, you know, why you think that's a better song?
Well, Rumpy, they were one of the best bands out, I reckon, out from Central Australia there. And some of the lyrics of their song, you know, that Isle, My Island Home, you know, and that one there, I like that one, though, Black Fella, White Fella. It's sort of, you know, it's what Australia's all about, really, you know. Singing about and sort of talking to white fellas too, saying, hey, there's black fellas here, we lived here a long time, we can live better together. That's what the message is.
That's right.
And, yeah, got a bit of a good beat to it, so, yeah, I always loved that song.
It was quite, it's still a good one.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yeah. It's a real foot tapper, that one, isn't it?
Yes, but going back to Carver, when we first started, a lot of our music, we didn't have a real lot of Aboriginal music, produced music and songs, so we had to search around. So it was great when we heard new songs like that.
Got it. Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, you claimed it straight away.
Mate, can you grab? Sorry, this is off the script here, yes. Live radio, like the old days, Murray.
Yeah, yeah.
mate, can you grab? I can't find that grab from Uncle Neville Bonner. Can you track that down, please? Yeah. All good. Yeah, so we'll get that.
Yeah, that's right. When you talk as black fella, white fella, as long as you're a true fella, I think the term that's used generally used to be you've got to be fair dickum.
Yeah. Fair dickum. And, you know, we forget about all of the support from non-Indigenous people, you know, through all those times, right from, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, going back to the Opal days, you know, even before then.
That's right.
You know?
No, you couldn't do without them, you know. It's good that there's, you know, a big mob of white fellas around this country that do have a good understanding of our culture and our mob and part of it. Always there, you know, when they're needed, they always show up. So it's great.
Here we go. I have found it. So this is part of our first broadcast. Right. Going back to 1993, 6th of April 1993.
How old were you? Was it your birthday?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there. I was 7 years old.
Yeah, I remember that.
Small boy.
Was it your birthday around there?
Yeah. Yeah,
same deadly, deadly.
Well, I've got you a few words from yourself here, Uncle Bob, and I might play that first,
right,
and then we'll play Uncle Neville Bonner.
Very good. Yes, thanks, Ross. It's a great honour for me to occupy the position of president of BEMA, and particularly on the day and what the day represents to Aboriginal people. And for one of a family, I would say this, that four generations of my family were born on, lived on, died on, and are buried on the Maiora Mission. With that background, and to occupy the position that I'm in now, and to see what has happened over the course of those many years, it's quite an emotional day for me, an emotional moment. And when I see my very good friend and respected elder, Auntie Jane Arnold, who belonged to the Purga Mission, we know where we come from, the direction we're going in, and what we're all about.
Murray began on 4ZZZ back in 1984, and from that time until now, Aboriginal people have been using that particular station to broadcast to Brisbane. And we hope that the message that has been coming through has not only been for Brisbane, but has been for the whole of Queensland. We've had a tremendously wonderful relationship with the staff and management of ZZZ, and I do here now want to say a very sincere thank you to them for their help, their encouragement over the past few years. This new station, Murray 4AAA, is run by Indigenous Australians. We use the word Indigenous, but we are Aborigines and Torres Strait Islanders, and we are very proud of our background, our culture, our traditions, our laws, and all of those things that are important to us as Aboriginal and Island people. We, for many, many years, and I suppose I can go over as many years perhaps as most of you here, perhaps with the exception of Auntie Janie, because I'm 71 years of age, and I've travelled extensively throughout this state, and I lived on Aboriginal, what's now called Aboriginal communities, which were called in those days Aboriginal mission stations, government missions, government stations, and church stations. And I've known what it is to be right down there at the bottom. We've always had someone else to make our decisions, to make our policies, to tell us when to get up, when to go to sleep, when to have a shave, when to have a meal even. But those things are changing. And it is about time that Australia has recognised that we, the Indigenous people of this country, we have come of age and we are making our own decisions. And it's about time those in higher places in politics and that realise that if there are going to be policies for us, the Indigenous people, then we should have some input into that policy, if not all of the input, because that those policies affect us now, affect our children, and it affect the future generations of the Indigenous people of this country. I worked for 12 years in Parliament, and I've seen lots of changes, but there are still many changes to come, and this is one of the ways that that can happen, because Aboriginal people will be broadcasting to all of the people in Brisbane, but more specifically, they are broadcasting to our people.
Uncle Senator,
that was wonderful to hear old Uncle, you know, talking like that back then. Very relevant, you know. He, some of the things he talked about, younger people today might find it hard to believe the sort of life that existed for blackfellas back then.
That's right.
So it was great to see old Uncle Neville, you know, at the start of the opening of the station, lay it on the line and talk about those things.
And there was another mention to another, particularly in this part of the country, Auntie Jane Arnold.
Yeah.
And for any listeners and community members out there that mightn't have heard that name, you know. And again, you know, these people now passed on, and we acknowledge their contributions and memory.
Yeah.
But for people out there who mightn't be familiar with Auntie Janie, you know.
I might leave that to Bob. You've got a better background, and she's a wonderful
Auntie Janie very well, and she was a wonderful woman. I do remember on one occasion, takes my mind back to a certain woman politician who's created a lot of unrest because of her racial outburst, that the one that used to have the fish and chip shop.
Oh, right, yep.
So Artie J. Arnold and a few others, they wanted to talk to her, and they say, oh, we want to talk to you. And that fish and chip lady, she took off. She didn't want to talk to Artie. It's some of the facts of life. So it's a wonderful position that they held, the women. But when you talk about calmness and dignity, they're wonderful. So all those reflections of mine, those days that I've experienced are treasures to me. And I must say, too, that I think I'm enjoying my 88th year, actually.
I was going to say, Unc, because I still remember you from them days, and you were Uncle Bob then, and you were an elderly man then. And
I think his cricket arithmetic, I was born in 1929. 30.
Yeah, getting up there. Yep.
So I got
you'd be 89 this year.
Yeah, the 31st of July. I chalk up another one.
So what's your secret, Unc?
Oh, I don't know. Think good things and, be proud of who you are and, who, and your country and have a good attitude to people.
And it is, you know, that thing of, you know, we hear all this stuff about close the gap and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's not as easy as just going to see your doctor every once in a while, you know.
No, that's
true. It's about that thing of who we are and feeling strong and proud of who we are and where we come from.
Well, exactly. Well, I was fortunate. I was able to get an apprenticeship as a carpenter. That I started the apprenticeship when I was 15. And I completed that, of course. Well, then I joined the Building Workers Industrial Union, which is a relevant union, and I became an activist to the extent that I was one of the elected state organisers of the Building Workers Industrial Union for 14 years, elected by the rank and file member. And that position took me all on building sites all over Queensland for 14 years. Mm. So again, I say that we can participate and be all the things we wish to be, and that's my message to the younger people. And the younger people, when I see them, the eager faces that they have and the good faces, I just smiled slowly and I say, well, when I see them, I know that the future is in good hands.
Exactly. That's the one thing I'd like to speak about too is our young people. Our population is growing at a very fast rate. We're growing a lot faster than mainstream Australia. And the thing is, though, I think it's something like, 40%?
45% or something.
45% of our young people are under the age of 15. So the thing is, we should be looking to our young ones. And I hope, you know, that's something the station can do. We need to have new people in, young people, new ideas. I don't understand this social media and the technology of it, but apparently that's the way things are going to go in the future. We heard Chris Graham at one of our workshops, Carver, talk about the changing face of radio station, the industry, you know. That's going to look very different in the future. And we need to look at our young people. We've got fantastic young people, smart young people that are getting qualifications and, you know, and all these degrees and different things. When we started the station, mate, none of us knew anything about radio. We didn't have a bloody clue.
That's right.
And, you know, we made some mistakes along the road. And we had to learn. We had to learn very fast, you know, the technology and the all about the industry. And we run up a few, you know, took a few wrong roads at first, but we come back on, you know. We worked it out and we come back on. And I'm glad to say, you know, people like Ross and Tiger helped steer the station to this. I'm glad they are. And now, you know, we've got younger people like yourself, and I see a lot of young people working here, which is great.
And we have that training centre, you know. That's the other part of the radio that we've been able to bring on and incorporate and develop up, you know. Yeah. So we are seeing this new generation and next generation come through and get those skills. But just
and
quickly,
the qualifications.
The qualifications. And they work in, you know, we've got people in NITV, ABC and
exactly.
all that, which is wonderful.
They're trained here at the station. So it makes you feel very proud when you see that, Bob, you know.
It does indeed. What Charlie's saying is built on a sound foundation.
Exactly.
So it augurs well for the future.
Now, one thing I did want to touch on because, you know, people who come here are always very impressed with the facility that we have here. You know, we have a wonderful facility for our radio and our training activities, and also we have the video studio. But we didn't always have that. You know, and it's a sort of marvelous achievement that that was gained by you know our predecessors, and of course you mentioned Tiger Bales, who we acknowledge, and but the road to that, Uncle Charles, you were chairperson at that time, and on the road to gaining this building, can you give us a bit of insight, sort of how that happened, and you know, was there struggles along the way, or
always struggles, mate. You can take it. Take it as a guarantee. Yeah, we always had struggles along the way, and you know, you think you'd overcome something, and bang, you know, next thing you'd be back. You know, you're going back a step or two. Look, I won't go into details, but it was really rough. We had to negotiate with the politicians and department heads, and that's state and federal, and quite often, you know, people are playing games. They don't want to do this or that, or they want to see this happen before that happens. And
well, government don't like partner with money, eh?
Mate. So, but anyhow, look, we got to the stage. What I think is our record stood up too, because we're a station that never had any problem as far as, you know,
financial administration, all that sort of
financial
stuff.
Financial administration. Mm. We're always right there. We could show a clean record. So, well, we're lucky in that sense that, you know,
I wouldn't say it's lucky. I mean, there's been good governance and solid governance around our, you know, financials.
Yeah, like I said, mate, no one was really experienced in it, you know, whether it was the administration of the station or the technical aspects and doing the radio itself. We had to learn from scratch, basically. And, I'm just glad we did. We worked it out together and we got there.
Mm. And there's a few different people that came to the party at that time, state government and other ones.
Yeah, and the feds, it was good. It sort of all happened at once. The planets were aligned.
Took some wrangling. And
It did. Yeah. It took years, basically, years. But I'm glad to say,
And the thing of what you're saying, you know, it's about, you know, leaving and supporting our next generation, and to know that this facility is here for our community and these young people who come to train and learn about media and be involved in media, that they can do it in state-of-the-art facilities, you know, and they practical experience.
And the thing is, what we got as older people too, I accept, and you must accept, that things are going to be different in the future from how we did it and what we think. Young people come up with now, they've got, you know, different ways of doing things and they see it a little bit different. And that's how it should be. If you stay static, you don't improve, go forward.
That's right. Well, the facilities you got now, the little gadgets you got there, like a mobile phone that can give you all the information, the size of a mobile phone, give you
all the internet and
exactly. So right. the young people are aware of that, so they're well equipped to understand what's going on and tap into all the information that they want to access. So we're part of, as I say, I'm so pleased to be associated with the radio stations, same as I was with the independent school. And I always pay my respects to Eve Christine Peacock, who is involved in the process. And I've got a book here, The History, Life and Times of Robert Anderson.
I think I've heard of him.
That's part of what Chris done. She having a talk to her with the different times on our involvement, our family involvement with the trade union and political movement. She thought my Richard life was interesting enough that she got a grant from Family Histories to publish the publication. So my story is there as part of the story of lots, if not all, Aboriginal people throughout the state.
Deadly.
That tells that my story.
And where can people access that, huh?
Yeah, my story is their story. If you Google the history, life and times of Robert Anderson.
Deadly. Yeah.
And what's wonderful about that too, by that lovely lady on the right-hand side, that's my great-grandmother, where Winnie Eber, who was born on the Moongalba, born on Mulgumpin, Moreton Island, about the mid-1800s, were on the cusp at the present time of our land title to that area after all these years. So nothing stays static, because we insist that the changes come about and justice be done. So anybody interested, if they Google the history, life and times of Robert Anderson, they'll get my story, my family story, and the history of colonisation that's impacted on many generations of different nationalities of people.
Deadly.
Carver, I just want to, while we're acknowledging, you know, Radio State Beamer, 26 years, is it? 25 broadcasting. But Beamer, the Brisbane Indigenous Media Association, it was also aligned to another media organisation. I think it was called Murray Image. And that brother Bob spoke about, Christine Peacock and Carly Fisher. They did the video, camera
They did.
And that quite often, for people, you know, going back in the, you know, 30, 40 years ago, they were coming to community meetings and they were filming and recording, and they've got a stack of file, unbelievable, the amount of, they were just about every community meeting recording what went on. And I take my hat off to them. We weren't formally related as organisation, but we were very supportive of each other.
Mm.
And quite often at different
meetings
and we'd both show up or we'd support each other, you know. And so I do acknowledge Sister Christine.
Granny and Chris,
brother
Uncle Carly.
Carly, you know, they did a hell of a lot of work. Mm-hmm. Carly, we actually sent that, when we went down to Canberra for the opening of that new Parliament House, we went down and together. It was great.
Now, just on that, you know, there have been so many people over the many years, right from the Murray-Our days, volunteers from the Murray-Our days to, you know, former staff here at the station over the last 25 years, and, you know, far too many to mention, but we acknowledge all of those that are part of the story. And, of course, you know, our old people that are no longer here, you know, particularly Tiger Bales, who we mentioned before, who, you know, CEO for over 20 years and a very important figure in Indigenous media right across the country. But, of course, I want to also acknowledge both of yourself, Uncle Charles, and yourself, Uncle Bob, for your time and your commitment to the station, both in, you know, the chairman roles over, you know, numerous years in each case, and your contributions to the story that is 98.9 FM and this community more broadly. If there's anything before, we only got a, you know, sort of 90 seconds or so to go till news, but is there any messages you'd like to leave for our listeners that have supported us over the years and just the community?
I just want to acknowledge someone else too. Mm. Back in the early days, it was a volunteer organisation when we at Triple Z, and a family, Glennis Croft, Glennis Marnie, and her family.
Absolutely.
They played a big role in
that. They did indeed. Mm.
They played a big part in getting this organisation off the ground.
Mm.
And if it wasn't for them, would have been very tough to be where we are today.
To hang on with it.
I do want everyone to know.
Of course.
Glennis Croft and her family, they were fantastic in how they helped set up the organisation.
Through that transition too, especially
because
keeping it on air in the Murray Hour.
Everyone was on the dole or receiving some, you know. some weren't receiving any payment at all, so it was all just purely voluntary.
Yeah. Any messages for our listeners out there and supporters over the years?
I think just bringing people together, helping the mainstream Australia understand about Aboriginal culture, about our way of life and how we are, and come and join us. I think people have been doing that for a long time, and I really appreciate that. And I think it's how we can come together, and it helps us come together. Bob.
Yes, they're approaching another constitutional referendum on how Aboriginal people are going to be mentioned in the Constitution. I'm sure the good people out there know what to do and be supportive of all actions that progress things and keep us together.
Thanks, Uncle. Thank you both, Uncles, for joining us today. And once again, you know, we appreciate your contributions over many years. And a lot of people might not know this, but you're the only two life members of BEMA. And we thank you for your contributions and appreciate your time today. Listen, let's talk. It's time for the news.
98.9 FM News.
Australia's privacy watchdog is investigating Facebook over fears as many as 1 in 50 local users may have had their personal information accessed by Cambridge Analytica. The Mark Zuckerberg-led multi-billion-dollar social media giant has admitted that 311,127 Australians are among the 87 million users worldwide whose data was unknowingly and improperly shared with the British political consulting agency. The Privacy Commissioner will consider whether Facebook breached the Privacy Act, which requires organisations to meet certain obligations, including taking reasonable steps to ensure personal information is held securely. Cambridge Analytica developed controversial tools for use in political campaigns and worked on Donald Trump's 2016 run for US president. Facebook says the 87 million figure is their best estimate of the maximum number of accounts that installed the agency's app and the friends of those app users whose data may have also been shared. Belinda Barnett, a data analytics expert at Swinburne University, says profile data like that collected by the group is just the tip of the iceberg. Social media companies collect data on every click made on their websites and consider that information their property, leaving users unable to adjust access to it in privacy settings. More than a third of Indigenous people have been the victim of direct racism online, while the majority have seen perils of sharing their culture on social media, a new national report reveals. The majority of Indigenous people using social media were selective about what they posted, for fears others would hit back with racism or violence, the social media mob Being Indigenous Online report has found. A Penrith woman is one of the 88% of respondents who had seen racism towards Indigenous people online. She said the comment section of a news article on Aboriginal people is the worst, massive stereotyping of Aboriginal people, racist memes being shared, YouTube videos taken without the permission of Aboriginal people. Yet another person said it was a good medium to fight racism, the report states. Other respondents saw social media as a new meeting place and provided a fresh way to practice and pass on cultural knowledge. As the federal government embarks on yet another campaign to find out how First Nations people want to tackle constitutional recognition, a co-chair of the latest working group says they already have an ideal model. The Uluru Statement from the Heart is a declaration resulting from a string of consultations around the country, which brought key recommendations such as a constitutionally enshrined Indigenous voice to Parliament and a Makarrata-style treaty process. The Prime Minister was met with backlash when it was revealed that he did not support an Indigenous voice to Parliament and has since established a new parliamentary committee to find a new way. Thomas Mayer co-chaired the Uluru Working Group and says a line has to be drawn.
We're consulted and consulted and consulted, but the problem is nothing ever gets implemented. That is, you know, thought through, that is a position from our people is ever implemented. And that's the problem. And that's where the line has to be drawn with the Uluru Statement from the Heart. And that is that there is a constitutionally enshrined voice to Parliament and that there's a Makarrata Commission for treaty making and for truth telling. You can't come up with anything different now. You know, I just cannot see how any committees, how any further consultations can say that there is something else.
Here's sport with the ABC.
Let's go to rugby league, because Canterbury coach Dean Payer slammed his side's poor performance in their 26-10 loss against the Canberra Raiders last night. The Bulldogs were on the back foot from the start of the match after the Raiders got out to a 12-0 lead at halftime. They extended their lead to 20 points after the break before a late try to Canterbury. Payer says his side needs to make a lot of improvements in coming weeks.
You know, we're making too many errors and it's just not putting us in the contest. We're just killing ourselves with errors and penalties. We're coming up with poor play where we're just turning the ball over far too much and letting them off the hook.
And that's the latest National Indigenous News.
Look out, you're listening to Let's Talk on 98.9 FM. Chelsea Bond and Angelina Hurley have a yarn and a laugh about what makes the mob wild this week.
Well, what are you? Are you an Aboriginal or not an Aboriginal?
I'll identify this time as black fella.
It's Wild Black Women on Let's Talk. And here they are. Chelsea Bond and Angelina Hurley.
Good morning.
Hey. How are you going?
It's Friday, not Thursday, and it's 10 o'clock.
I know.
We're in the studio live at 10 o'clock to celebrate 25 years of radio.
Yay. Hip, hip.
Hooray.
That wasn't very enthusiastic.
Sorry. Before we get into the hour, we want to acknowledge the Turrbal Nyagra people. We want to acknowledge the traditional owners and the land in which you're listening from around the country this morning, joining in celebrating our birthday. Today's show is a very special show because it's the Wild Black Woman with the OBWs.
Yes.
The original black woman of 98.9 FM. Karen. Yay. Here, frowning and looking at me.
Oh, well, I was thinking that could go any way there, OBW. Anyway, I'm not going to even entertain
don't
it.
Don't go there, no.
We've got Karen in the studio. We've got the great Arnie Lilla Watson from the Aunties
yes.
show. He'll be joining us very shortly. And we're going to talk about the legacy of black women on this station.
Okay. You're looking at me there. I've got a lot of responsibility here. You should be looking at Auntie Lilla.
I'm a bit anxious here because we've got to, I don't want to miss names out of some of the amazing black women that have been part of this studio, the station, who've been on air. But we just want to celebrate how beautiful it is to have black women on radio.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, particularly in community radio or you know, at least fronting Indigenous-specific programs, if we look at Sister Girl there down in New South Wales there, Carla Grant, how long did she Living Black? She's still doing it?
Yeah.
Then we've had people like Paulette Whitten, who was for a long time the anchor of Black Chat there at Koori Radio. It's now, you know, taken over by Lola Forrester. Then you've got people like Dot West, you know, who've been, you know, doing broadcasting for a long time. Just sort of giving a kind of a national perspective, I suppose. But here, Brisbane, yeah. Oh, I might leave it with Auntie Lilla, eh? Because she probably got a longer association with the station than me. My time was from like around 1997, so maybe a few years after. When I joined the organisation back in the day, after coming from 17 years at the ABC, at Auntie there, that another Auntie.
The other Auntie, hey.
I used to listen to her on ABC every Saturday morning. I look forward to this one.
I was Deadly Gardener back then. No, not even. No,
I used to listen for the fishing. She'd talk to those fellas on
you were listening for the surf and report there, so you could.
I used to listen to her when she was on ABC Radio, and then when she came to work here, I thought, oh, wow.
Yeah, no fishing here, though. Might have to do a fishing show, eh? Just all woman one.
Hey, yeah. Show them men how to do it. what was that like, jumping across from Auntie to here?
It was actually refreshing. I actually got a taste for radio back home up on Thursday Island because I'd always wanted to work in media, so I sort of cut my teeth doing, shout-outs and filing away vinyl records and all that kind of stuff, getting community announcements and that sort of stuff, so I got the taste for radio. And SIMA, Torres Strait Islanders Media Association, started up in much the same way as 98.9 FM. We were piggybacking on the ABC frequency up there, so they got a two-hour show. And then eventually it grew into what it is today, its own 24-hour radio station. But, yeah, and then going across to the ABC was, totally different. I actually worked in a regional centre, so I didn't actually work in a metropolitan area. Right. So you actually had to do pretty much everything that you have to do here in a community radio station. So working in a regional station is the same as working in a community radio station. Mm. Not as well resourced, and you have to do everything. You've got to be a Jill of all trades.
Hey. And what kind of shows did you have to do over this time?
I was a producer for a few morning producer and presenter for a few morning shows. So one in Cairns, one in Mackay. I was in Mackay for a good while there, and then came to Brisbane, and was doing. Originally worked on a statewide sort of current affairs half-hour show in the morning, and that was on the local radio network across Queensland. So worked there for a little bit, and then they then moved across to Speaking Out, which is a national Indigenous program now being presented by Larissa Berendt currently. And the original presenter of that was a local fella here, Wayne Coolwell.
Of course.
And, took over sort of producing Wayne. So that was really good working with somebody with the experience of Wayne because he, you know, got into the ABC through television and sports basically. Mm-hmm. So that seemed to be the sort of progression of blackfellas into the ABC was either through the newsroom, through radio local programs or through sports.
Always the sports, eh?
Mm-hmm. It's been an interesting sort of pathway. Come back to my roots. That's what I said when I first saw the late Tiger Bales, you know, so, you know, it was coming back to my roots.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. We were talking about how the Wild Black Women this morning are joined by the OBWs, the original black women involved with the station. Can you tell us, our listeners, a bit about your history with this station?
Well, firstly, I'd just like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Jagera people and the Turrbal people. And, well, the history of the station, where can I start? I can remember my dear's older sister. She had gone to Alice Springs and she came back so enthusiastic about radio. And then she went to Sydney with her family and they started radio down in Sydney from Skid Row to, I think, Radio Redfern. And then... and then my brother Ross, he said, you know, sister's right, because radio really is an essential service for our community. And he started going out to 4ZZZ, started off with just a small amount of time and that gradually grew. And Glenys Croft and her family became involved. And do you know, I think Glenys and her family really kicked off commercial radio stations having more than one announcer. Because you know how Murrays are? We operate much better in a group than we do individually. And the whole family would go in and sit at the mic. And it was, you know, you talk, you talk. No, you talk.
We don't have that problem.
Here, my turn.
And that's Glenys and the family shared the mic. So you just weren't hearing one voice. You weren't hearing one voice. You're hearing two or three Murray voices. And commercial radio, I think, picked up on that very quickly. And in no time at all, they were copying what the Murrays were doing.
Not surprised.
Yes, so I can remember Kev Carmi, when Triple Z was in the basements, more or less, at UQ. And Kev Carmi had come and sit with Ross and sing his songs directly on the mic.
Awesome.
I can remember when they had to move from the university to Toowong somewhere, Triple Z, and, of course, the we stayed with them. And I think that's where Glenys and her family mainly broadcast from. And there's this young fella came out of prison in New South Wales and he had a tape. And this tape was Archie Roach, from Archie Roach, the first version of They Took the Children Away. He made it in prison. And we played it on Murray Radio. And he'd given the tape to this young fella and he said, I want it played on Murray Radio in Brisbane. And he bought it up and that was it. But there was a lot of hurdles we had to go through. There were a lot of hurdles we had to go through to get there, and I think maybe on Talkback they probably mentioned some of that. But it was a very, hard struggle. Ross wasn't working, I wasn't working. Sister Maureen, Charlie, I think was the only one that had a job. and I can remember, you know, Atsic just came into being, and here we were, you know, putting him for this radio station. And the first meeting of Atsic, where was it? In Melbourne. And Ross said, we have to go to that meeting because we'd been running around, and he jumped in his car. I don't know, can't remember who he took with him, but they just drove overnight all the way to Melbourne to be there when ATSIC met so they could get their foot in the door and say, look, we need funding for this radio station. And it's an essential service for our community. And that was, you know, he just don't know how he did it. You know, he just drove all night to get to Melbourne in time for that.
Wow,
that's amazing.
If you've just joined us, this is the Wild Black Women with some of the original black women of 98.9 FM. We're celebrating 25 years of radio.
Time, you might need these tips. Firstly, come with an affordable budget for the cost of the car, maintenance, insurance, fuel, and registration. Don't choose poorly so sneaky salespeople get rich. They might say someone else is interested in buying, or you can't beat the price, so they can make their sale. When looking, take your time, shop around, and give the car a good inspection. A clear sign of a dodgy salesman is if they pressure you to sign the contract. This could mean something's wrong with the car. And be wary if they offer insurance. They can rip you off this way too and make you pay more for less. Get outside advice if you're unsure of anything. Don't be afraid to say no and don't sign things you don't understand. Check out A6 Money Smart website for more helpful information at moneysmart.gov.au.
The Managing Bungu project was made possible by a grant from Financial Literacy Australia.
Look out. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.9 FM. It's Chelsea Bond and Angelina Hurley.
It is, and we are on a different time slot, on a different day, because we're celebrating a birthday today. Yay. 25 years. Yeah. And in this hour, we're celebrating Black Women on the Mic here at the station. I also just want to give a quick shout-out on my way in here. I saw on Facebook Live some Black Women on the Mic down on the Gold Coast talking to former Premier Peter Beattie.
Oh, true.
So Sister Ruby Wharton and Gwenda Stanley were using the mic for a very important purpose. So shout out to those sisters that are that are doing that work right now. But we are joined by the original Black woman from 98.9 FM, or some of the original Black women, 98.9 FM, Karen Durante and Aunty Lilla Watson, of course. And I was wondering if you could tell us about your time on the Let's Talk format with the aunties.
Yes, well, the manager of the station at that time, my nephew, asked Auntie Mary Graham and I to come in and do an interview, and apparently that went very well.
Mm.
And he asked us to come back again, and that sort of then grew into like a regular, I think every fortnight on a Thursday when Angry Black Women.
It's a tradition, see?
Following in the ways of our people.
And Mary and I used to come in then on a regular basis, and we talked about anything and everything. So, and I think, people, I think, enjoyed it, and we kept going.
Did you? Well, I'm curious about the response because us as well, Black women, we're a little bit cheeky sometimes, and sometimes we get people who surprised by. Did you ever take callers or get any interesting responses?
We used to take callers, but fortunately, we only got callers who were positive.
Of course. Whoops.
There were negative callers who. we didn't get to take their calls.
Oh.
But there were negative callers, of course.
Yeah.
But we enjoyed it very much. And we spoke about politics, we spoke about history, we spoke about everything.
And how long did the Arnie's go for?
Oh, it went for a while.
Good while.
Mm. Good while. Yeah. I can't say. I'm not very good at dates or time.
Well, we moved in here, 2011 into this new building here. Yeah. So I would say that it would have been from about 2012 up until...
last year. Probably.
Last year, yeah.
And was that your first time doing radio or have you done it before? Or?
No, I've never done radio before.
True. And can I ask, because the reason I ask is for asking for a friend, for people who have just had the similar experience of, Carver invited us in to do a Let's Talk and next thing, we should do that more regularly. And I think I'm curious about, even the shows, like did you plan your shows each week?
No.
Did you just come in and talk? And
yes, no, we just came in and talked and we might sit with Tiger a couple of minutes before we come on and he'd say, well, this is in the news and something else has been spoken about. Maybe we could cover these things. And we mainly went with what was in the news at the time to discuss and talk about the issues that had arisen maybe through the week.
Like Wild Black Women in
pretty much
your material comes from non-Indigenous media. I mean, the things that's said on there, and it was good having the aunties on, giving a broader or more diverse opinion about these,
and often more
these
intelligent
matters.
And insightful.
Yes, yes,
and informed.
lived experience
yes,
of the aunties.
Yes,
but it's been my first time mucking around on radio. But Angeline, it's not your first time at the radio.
I've only ever had one other experience on radio, and that was showing my age back in the 80s at high school. And I went to Triple Z used to be at the uni UQ, and there was a hierarchy of cool students who did the shows and that. But we used to do Graveyard Shift and I did it a few times, and they used to have J.B. Aki Peterson's phone number on the whiteboard, and I was cheeky back then, Arnie, you can tell. But we used to ring him up in the middle of the night and Wumba would answer the phone.
What does he say? And what do you say?
And he'd be like, yeah, students, yeah, ringing me in the middle, yeah, and we'd be like just busting up laughing and hang up.
So wow. Yous were the original prank callers, eh?
But like, he was, it was just, you know, how we used to talk.
Yes, poor fella.
You couldn't help yourself. It was just too tempting. There was a phone
especially
and a
especially when you're young and young students. I think it's a great prank. And
he deserved it.
And Chelsea, I have to say that you dabbled in a bit of radio over at the ABC.
Your uni days. I come and hung out with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey.
Do you remember what that was about?
Yeah.
It was some kind of project. We were like, was it positive stories about?
Yeah, so I do remember. I was on
so
a thing
showing
called.
Your age
yeah,
now.
I do remember. I was National Youth Roundtable. It was a thing where they used to like get young people to converge on Canberra and you make a project because they want to empower young people. And so my project was to do a radio show around getting some amazing black fellas talking about their identity stories.
That's it.
And I think it was Lighter Shades of Brown or something like that.
Yes.
And we just got different mob yarning and you packaged it really beautifully.
I did the editing for you, but you did all the hard work.
She was showing me how to use the desk and everything. I didn't remember any of those skills.
No, it's useless.
Still
here.
Don't? No.
Different desk here, so.
Nothing. So I was interested in, I've been interested in media because as a black fella, you hear the stories told about us. And there's something about, it's a real privilege to have the opportunity to hold the mic. And to think, you know, we muck around, but I still take it very seriously, the privilege and opportunity to sit in this chair, in this place with this on. And we think a lot about what we're saying, what we're doing, why we're doing it, who we're doing it for. So in amongst the laughter is some deep thinking about what are we, how are we speaking to the minds and souls of our own mob. Every week, you know. And so sometimes I think people mistake our laughter as a...
it's flippant and all of that stuff, but it's not. And it comes from a place of, you know, me historically, personally, not ever hearing women's voices and our opinions ever in the media.
No, I think it's a wonderful show. I enjoy it and I tune in every Thursday. I think you've got a lot of fans out there.
A lot of male fans too.
Well,
I know.
You can blame us. Hear that
phone? I can hear that phone ringing. No.
Maybe I should stick around here more.
Hey, hey,
look at that. Woo-hoo. Where's my woo-hoo?
Just don't tell my husband.
Hey, don't tell Uncle. Okay, we'll be in trouble. Karen, I was curious about, you know, radio. In the mainstream, it's typically been a boys' club, hasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. You wouldn't, for instance, find too many women who anchor their own breakfast show, for instance, not at least in commercial radio. And, you know, like you were saying before, Auntie Lilla, they've gone down the two-headed, three-headed kind of programs now, and so there's always one sort of token female.
The sidekick.
The sidekick, yes. and usually, though, the sensible one. That brings it all sort of back to, you know, some...
The Lisa to the Carl.
Yes. Kind of, yeah, exactly.
The Chelsea to the Ange. No.
But, yeah, no, it is very, very male-dominated industry. Although when I started working for the ABC in Cairns, at that stage we had... That was different because we actually had three or four women who were doing on-air stuff. The newsroom in Cairns was predominantly all women. I think we had the journalist in charge was a male, but everything else, every local content that came out.
The people
out
who did the stuff were all women.
Were all women, yes. And in fact, we used to get phone calls from people complaining that it was a station just with women presenters.
Oh, true.
They called us whispering virgins. I don't know what whispering...
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know what whispering virgins sound.
You cannot be serious.
Yes.
Sounds good.
that sort of thing just stuck with me. Whispering virgins. And
look out.
And most people didn't realise that I was a black fella either. So. Okay.